the advent of dart guns, it's pretty tempting to just hit every lameness with a shot of antibiotic and either forget about them or come back and hit them with another dart of a different concoction.
Dr. Lacey Farmeyer is my guest today as we discuss the second most costly animal health issue in our industry, lameness. What are the factors that contribute to animals coming up lame? Things like nutrition, environment, and yes, even your genetics.
It's a heritable trait. Like the design of the foot is something we can select for.
And not everything is foot rot.
I want to caution people to do a little bit more diligent work in trying to assess that animal so that we can get it back on track.
Plus, what does navel infection in these baby calves have to do with lameness? Today, we cover all the angles of this issue in our cattle and begin to understand that what is being manifested in the soundness of our cattle could be from an underlying issue.
Sometimes I feel like lameness can be like a canary in the coal mine.
Tune in for this week's edition of the Working Ranch Radio Show. Hi, everyone, and we welcome you here again to the Working Ranch Radio Show. I'm Justin Mills. If you are a return listener, well, first of all, thank you for tuning in here again. We hope you enjoy this week's show. And if this is your first time joining us, well, be sure to tune in as we have a lot going on. Not only are we going to get in depth on our subject here today, but also later on in the show, meteorologist Don Day will be in with a look at our long-term weather across the country. In addition, the captain, Tim O'Byrne, publisher of Working Ranch Magazine, will drop in this week's edition of Tim's Two Cents. And in this show, I'm going to do something I haven't really ever done before. And I'm going to dip into the mailbag as I had a great email from a listener out of Manitoba in response to last week's show, as we were talking with Dr. Mark Johnson from Oklahoma State University on what is the value of a good bull. So that's all a part of this week's show. Plus, of course, our subject at hand today is we're going to be talking about lameness in our livestock. And I'm pleased to have back with us Dr. Lacey Farmeyer, who is a practicing veterinarian at Stillwater Veterinary Clinic. That's in South Central Montana around the Red Lodge area, and also a Valley Vet Supply Technical Service veterinarian that if you're online there with Valley Vet and you ask the vet for their advice, she might be one of those that you talk to from Valley Vet Supply. And Dr. Lacey, glad to have you today joining us on the Working Ranch Radio Show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, I reached out to you on this particular topic as I prefaced it last week in the show, telling folks what we would be talking about this week. I do feel it's an issue that if you run cattle, it doesn't matter the age, the type, whatever that is, lameness in livestock, in your cattle is something we're all going to deal with.
Yeah, I think that's true. Especially, you know, all sectors of the industry have to deal with it in one way or the other. And, you know, it is one of the more costly animal health issues we deal with in the industry. And it's also, you know, a major animal welfare concern, too, when it gets out of hand. So I do think it's really important and something worth talking about for sure.
One of the things that I have always felt in our cattle industry that is very costly to our industry is longevity, the fact that we can't keep cattle in our herds longer. And one of the factors of not keeping cattle in our herd is directly this particular issue as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think when you look at, you know, the cost of development of a heifer to keep in your program, or just the outright market price for a bred heifer these days, you know, you need her to last in order for that to be a profitable investment. And soundness and longevity go hand in hand for sure. And, you know, in addition to the treatment costs and the labor that's involved to get that done, I just think there's a lot here that makes it worth focusing on to contribute to your bottom line when it comes to the longevity aspect for sure.
Yeah. And maybe you've already a bit answered this question next, but I know this is a topic that has been a big thing for you and you've done a lot of education regarding it. But what are you seeing that you feel makes this a pretty important topic for our cattle industry?
Yeah, you know, I've been exposed to it from a lot of different angles, I suppose. You know, I was raised in the purebred side of the business on an Angus outfit. And so, you know, I saw firsthand just how important structural correctness and foot conformation were to the longevity of those cattle for sure. And then when I went to school at Kansas State University to veterinary medicine, that was kind of an area of focus for my research. And we're fortunate there that we've got a great group of experts kind of in that area particularly. And so I got to work closely with those folks, Dr. Meisner, especially there at Kansas State is one of my mentors, and he's just done so much in bovine lameness, from complicated cases to the everyday and sorting out the in-between and doing the research to try to figure out, you know, what the causes are and, you know, how we can mitigate some of these effects and also the best treatments when we do have to get involved in the more complicated cases.
Mm-hmm. So in your dual capacity, both as a practicing veterinarian in South Central Montana, and also with your, as you provide technical services for Valley Vet Supply, what are you seeing with this particular issue? The prevalence of it, we know that it is a very costly issue to our industry. What are you seeing?
You know, next to bovine respiratory disease, I would say it is the second most costly animal health issue to the beef industry. And then that also, you know, goes towards the dairy sector as well, especially with the way we push those animals and the environments they're in today. It's a big, big issue. And so, you know, in my private practice, I've seen the number of cases grow in the time that I've been there. And it's nice. We do have a tilt table so we can tilt bulls that are 2,500 pounds out with no issue. So that does mean we're kind of a hub for evaluating more serious lameness type cases. But even on a herd level, when I'm consulting with some of my commercial guys, you know, we talk about some of the, you know, nutritional aspects of it or things that are within their control, or maybe even implementing a bacteria, Bactrin, as far as a vaccine goes, to prevent foot rot. You know, so yeah, I get to see it from a lot of different angles. And it's an issue that it's just not going away. Yeah. And unfortunately, I feel like it's actually becoming a little more prevalent. And some of that, I believe, has to do with, you know, how hard we push these animals. You know, we do expect a lot out of them, and the environments they're in are sometimes challenging. And so as producers and as veterinarians, you know, we just have to do the best we can to select for the right type of cattle to try to have less lameness issues. And then also when it does arise, you know, try to do the best we can in terms of treatment protocols that get those animals back to peak performance as quickly as possible and keep them in the herd.
Yeah. It's interesting that you talked about you're seeing maybe a little more prevalence of some of this, and it has to do with some of it pushing these cattle maybe at earlier parts of their lives in this. Last week, we were talking about bull selection and how much can we pay for a bull, and looking at the fact that when it comes to this bull buying season, one of the concerns is always an issue of how fast were these bulls pushed, in the fact that it does cause some lameness issues and it does cause burnout of these bulls earlier on in their life. Just from that perspective, what are some things that, if you were to advise folks as they're purchasing and looking at buying bulls, what are some of the structural things from a lameness standpoint that you would advise them to be looking at and considering?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about the nutrition component of it, you know, it's always a fine line of we're trying to maximize that genetic potential and you know, see who is the best performer, the most efficient animal. And so they do go on, you know, these pretty high carbohydrate type diets to get them to that point. But we don't want to tip them over the edge. And I think that's where, you know, you need to sort of look at how those bulls are developed, decide who, you know, you want your seed stock supplier to be. And bulls that I think are developed maybe at a little slower rate sometimes have better longevity. The issue becomes when they're fed that higher concentrate carbohydrate diet, sometimes they develop rumen acidosis occasionally if they get pushed a little too hard, or some cattle are just, you know, bigger eaters. And so they are more apt to develop that rumen acidosis. And so that pH just gets a little low. And so from that excessive carbohydrate that they're ingesting, and then ultimately that allows bacteria to kind of seep out of the rumen. And then we can see liver abscesses form. And then we can also see poor hoof horn development and conditions like white line disease and laminitis, you know, more commonly known as founder, mm-hmm. can occur. And those can lead to chronic pain and long-term, you know, changes to the hoof and issues that way. I would say it's less common to see that. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I do feel like our nutritionists and folks are putting a little bit more emphasis on trying to take a balanced approach to developing those heifers and bulls and avoid the negative implications of pushing them into acidosis. But that's something you want to be aware of. I think look at the ration they're on and make sure that ration, you know, especially as you get closer to turnout time, that they're being transitioned to more of a forage-based diet so that they can excel, you know, on the ranch and in the real world as well.
Yeah.
So evaluating kind of what they've been fed and making sure they're not too fat either. I mean, that can also contribute to issues with semen quality as well. I see that a lot. So it's multifactorial what pushing those cattle a little too hard can cause. And I would look at, you know, do you see that the hoof wall is a little too long? You know, does it look like, you know, some people trim their bulls' feet before sales. Mm-hmm. I would say that's the minority. I would say most people, you know, what you see is what you get, but maybe going ahead of the sale to evaluate those bulls, you know, watching them move in the lot, making sure that, you know, they've got a good stride and looking at the depth of that heel and making sure that those toes are symmetric and that they hit the ground nice and square. You don't want to see one where the claws are crossing over. I think that's probably one of the bigger things I'm seeing that you could predict that that's going to have problems down the road. If you see that, especially the outside claws and oftentimes in the front feet, but the back ones as well, if you see those outside claws starting to turn in, or scissor claws, we call it sometimes, that leads to problems with sole ulcers and longevity for sure.
Yeah, very good. It's interesting what some of the things that you said we heard last week. So I like that, because not that I questioned last week's, but it's good when people can hear the same thing twice. And you went even more in depth in some of this that I think is very, very helpful. And I know a lot of folks have already maybe purchased bulls and still yet to a lot of bulls to be purchased. But I think some of the things you talked about, I really like that. Some things I hadn't really thought about as well. And I think it'll be very valuable to folks listening. We're going to take a break here, folks. My guest today is Dr. Lacey Farmeyer. She's a private veterinary owner at Stillwater Veterinary Clinic out of South Central Montana. Also, by chance, if you were to call in to Valley Vet Supply and ask the vet, she might be on the other end there. And so we appreciate her insight into this. We're going to continue. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about what are some of the factors behind lameness that we're seeing in our cattle, and then what can we do about it? We'll get into all of those things when we continue on here on the Working Ranch Radio Show.
When your goal is to help animals reach their full potential, health matters. Diamond V offers a fresh perspective on animal health, a perspective that supports gut health, strengthens immunity, and enhances performance. For those who choose to invest in keeping healthy animals healthy, feeding Diamond V makes a statement about another dimension of profit, where margins are measured by confidence in your future. To get a fresh perspective, visit DiamondV.com, because animal health deserves a healthier approach.
Welcome back to the Working Ranch Radio Show. As we continue on, we're talking about lameness in our livestock. And I not to repeat myself again and again, but if you own cattle, you've had to deal with this one way or the other. My guest today is Dr. Lacey Farmeyer. She is a veterinary owner with Stillwater Veterinary Clinic out of South Central Montana, and also part with Valley Vet Supply as their technical service veterinarian. And Dr. Lacey, as we were talking, just kind of setting the stage in the last segment, we're going to now talk about what are some of the causes behind lameness. And as we get into this, I think we can expand a little bit further, because I think for a lot of us, we just kind of feel lameness comes back to one thing. And I think there's several different things here that can cause this. Let's go through those. The first one, as we were a bit talking in the last segment about bulls specifically, and if bulls are rushed a little bit or overfed, they can cause some lameness. So let's talk specifically nutrition, not just in our bulls, but in our developing heifers and our cows as well.
Yeah, I definitely think it has an impact on the female side also. I would say that, you know, just like I mentioned previously, we talked about the effects on the hoof horn quality and what that can lead to in terms of laminitis and inflammation. Additionally, another thing, and as you're looking to purchase cattle, you know, looking at those joints as well, I think, you know, 90% of lameness does occur in the foot, but there is still some of that that is due to issues that are above there. So let's say if they have swollen hocks, that could be an indicator that, you know, maybe if they were pushed too hard, another thing that can happen if they get acidotic and they have bacteria circulating in through their blood, because cattle are ruminants, right? And so they are constantly bacteremic, which means they have a small amount of bacteria circulating in their system all the time, which is why they're such masters at making abscesses. So literally anytime they get a bruise, it typically will turn into an abscess because those bacteria kind of have a perfect media to set up shop and proliferate and cause a problem. So what I was getting at, though, is with the joint swelling is sometimes that bacteria that's circulating in the bloodstream, and if it gets to a higher level because of the acidosis, it can get stuck at their growth plates. And so at the growth plate, that's called a phycitis when we get an infection at the growth plate. So in these young developing cattle, you know, typically around that 8 to 12 month mark when they're growing rapidly, that's something that can occur. And sometimes it causes lameness, and other times they get away with it. And maybe it's just, you know, a transient swelling and will go away, but it could have long-term impacts, you know, on how long they can stay sound, and maybe later on down the road, it could cause problems with arthritis or other issues. So that's another thing, I guess, that another reason to try not to push them over the edge when it comes to their structural correctness and soundness for long-term success.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk one other thing, and it kind of maybe ties another cause of lameness together with nutrition, and that is environment. But specifically, a lot of times people think with lameness, it just gets identified as foot rot. And we're going to talk about that in a bit, because it's not always that, as you will tell us. But at the same time, when we talk about nutrition and then you tie some environment into that, let's talk about the mineral. And of course, when we get into there, you know, we look at foot rot, zinc and iodine and those kinds of things that can help fight against some of that. But let's talk about the mineral element part of the nutrition and tying that in with the environment.
Yeah, the zinc especially, I have found, has been important in maintaining that barrier against infectious causes of lameness. And so I do think people need to keep a close eye on mineral consumption, making sure that it's out there in front of them all year round, and especially during times of stress. You know, when they're in areas where it's muddier and damp, I think they're even more predisposed to that bacteria, you know, being able to set up shop if it gets an opportunity. And then, of course, in areas where country is really rough and you've got sharp rocks, you know, and things like that, they're more likely to have abrasions to that interdigital space between the toes. And then that really does allow that fusobacterium to proliferate and cause what we know as foot rot. And foot rot, I'm sure everybody is pretty familiar with that one, but it's more of a symmetric swelling around that coronary band, right where the hair meets the hoof. Mm-hmm. And if it's swollen all the way around, and you know that lameness has come on pretty rapidly, you can be pretty sure it's fusobacterium and foot rot. And that does thankfully respond to the majority of antibiotics we have approved for livestock. And so, you know, you could use oxytetracycline if you've got, you know, a more valuable animal that you want to hit with a little bigger gun. You know, some of the macrolides like Draxxin or Zaprevo, those kind of things could do just as well. But when the swelling is not symmetric at that coronary band, when it becomes what we call asymmetric, so maybe it's just the swelling is just really profound around one claw and not the other, that's a good indicator that it is not your run-of-the-mill foot rot, or it's foot rot gone mad. Yeah. And it's okay. Gone to deeper tissues.
Yeah.
So that's just one of those times where especially if the swelling is asymmetric, it is worth getting them in, pulling up that foot, taking a better look at what's going on, and possibly even getting them to a veterinarian for more advanced treatment options. Because likely if that infection has migrated to the joint, then the antibiotics alone are not going to fix them, that yeah. You're going to have to do something a little bit more involved to get them over that infection.
Mm-hmm. And I know before we went on air, this is one of the things that we were talking, just in general, I feel like as ranchers, if we see something lame out there, in most cases, we just attribute it to foot rot and we start that treatment. And then if that doesn't work, we do more treatment of the same stuff. And I know as a veterinarian and as a consultant yourself, that's one of the things that's a little bit frustrating from you to see that happening.
It is. And I shared that with you. You know, I'm pretty passionate about this topic because cattle are so resilient. And if given the opportunity, the treatment success is usually very high for lameness, especially if it's in the foot. But if we waste valuable time with treatments that are not going to be effective for the issue, then, of course, our success rate goes down dramatically. And cattle are worth so much money these days that I just feel like we need to do everything we can to keep them in production, right? And make them get to that end goal. And so if, let's say after 48 hours, let's say you thought it was foot rot and you doctored them appropriately, but let's say in 48 hours, they are no better. Let's say they're still toe touching lame. Mm-hmm. It's still really obvious that they're in discomfort. Then I just want to caution people not to just give them another round of antibiotics or just switch to a different antibiotic. In many cases, that's an indicator. If they don't respond within 48 hours and look at least a little better, mm-hmm. that's a good indicator that it's something more significant. It's a different issue than just foot rot alone, and it's going to need for you to take a different approach for you to be able to have a successful treatment outcome. And we don't want to waste valuable time, because if we can flush the joint, let's say in the first few days of a joint infection, we can sometimes have pretty good success of getting them over that. But if we wait longer, if we don't get to see those animals until they've been lame for 7 to 10 days, 2 weeks, by that time, there's a lot of damage that's been done that we really just can't undo to the cartilage or to the bone, things of that nature that then make it more of a cull situation. And we just don't want to see it get to that point when, if we had the correct intervention earlier on, we could have more success for you.
Yeah. And that leads me then to one of the other causes of lameness, and that is genetics. And I guess what I meant by it leads me to that is because in this particular case, as we were talking about, if it is a bull that comes down lame and that treatment doesn't happen, or they don't respond to the treatment within 48 hours, I think it'd be very valuable from a breeding perspective, genetic wise, to know whether that's something in there that's just a foreign object of some sort that is not a genetic issue, or it is a genetic issue. And so that's why I guess we tie that in there with genetics being one of the factors that's a cause of lameness.
It absolutely is. You know, I see it, unfortunately, more and more. I see issues with hoof conformation or structural conformation on cattle that lead to some of these problems. And it's a heritable trait. Like the design of the foot is something we can select for. And there are genetic tools out there for that with some of your different breed associations at this point. The one I'm most familiar with would be the Angus Association's foot structure EPDs. They have one for claw set and one for foot angle. And I do think that they've gotten enough phenotypes gathered at this point that I think that those are pretty valuable tools to use and reliable. I think now you can put some trust into those. And I want to encourage those purebred breeders listening to keep submitting those phenotypes, keep contributing to that data pool so that we can make it as accurate as possible and try to get a handle on some of these issues that I think are really preventable. When we talk about, you know, especially the claw set, mm-hmm. you know, we want to see those toes that are evenly spaced, you know, appropriately spaced, not too wide apart, not too narrow, and of course, pretty symmetric. That scissor claw issue I was talking about, you know, that would be a higher foot score. So that would be like a number 9 is what you would give that. And the ideal type foot score for both claw set and foot angle would be a 5. So if you're looking at those EPDs, you know, that's kind of the range you want to be in. When we get those too upright of a foot angle, like at 45 degrees is about right and for an ideal pastern joint. But when they get to be too straight up and down, they can have issues and put more strain on their joints and issues like that, or maybe more toe abscesses. And then, of course, if it's the opposite, if it's too flat, so that would be like a number 9, mm-hmm. then you're going to have issues with their heel conformation. You're going to have sometimes issues with developing more issues in terms of heel ulcers or other problems. So I do think genetics is a component. I think it's something that we need to pay attention to as breeders and make it a selection criteria that you care about, because it really does contribute to how long I think they stay in the herd. And those hoof cracks, you know, are a result of the hoof conformation. So it's just, it's structural like anything else in terms of design. You know, these are big animals. We're putting a lot of, you know, pressure on their whole body system. And if we push them too far, sometimes things break down, right? And so if the angle to the claw isn't quite right, or if they're putting more pressure on the outside walls of their hoof instead of the evenly distributing it, the result is going to be damage to that hoof wall, and in the form of a vertical hoof wall crack or in the form of sole ulcers that can lead to infection. So yeah. I definitely want to encourage people to try to use it as a selection criteria and look at it. Don't just buy your bulls based off of just the numbers. Yeah. I want you to take a look at them as well, because sometimes you can prevent a lot of issues if you select for the right things up front.
Yeah, very good advice there. We're going to take a break here, folks. When we come back, we're going to continue. My guest today is Dr. Lacey Farmeyer. She is a private veterinary owner at a Stillwater Vet Clinic in South Central Montana. We've got more questions. We're going to continue. I've got a few more questions just around some of these causes behind lameness that Dr. Lacey just talked about. And then also we're going to talk about what can we do? What are some of the things that we can, how we can manage this so we don't have to deal with this in our herds, or in fact reduce the amount that we're having to deal with in our herds as well. Before we head to break here today, I want to remind you this segment brought to you by the American Gelve Association. You can make your crossbreeding count with Gelve and Balancer Genetics. Find out more at gelve.org. We'll be back after this.
Capitalize on crossbreeding with Gelve and Balancer bulls. Raise replacement females with added fertility, increased longevity, and greater productivity. Gelve and Balancer influenced females wean more pounds of calf per cow exposed. In the feed yard, Balancer influenced cattle offer increased performance, improved feed efficiency, and have excellent carcass merit. Balancers add the pounds, make the grade, and deliver the value. Make your crossbreeding count with Gelve and Balancer Genetics.
And welcome back to the Working Ranch Radio Show. As we continue on, our subject today is looking at lameness. My guest today is Dr. Lacey Farmeyer, a veterinary owner at a Stillwater Veterinary Clinic in South Central Montana. And Dr. Lacey, as we were talking about some of the different aspects or things that cause lameness, as we were talking there on break, there's some other things I want to get into, but I just kind of offhand mentioned, when you were talking genetics and the shape and the angle and things that we look for, we should be looking for when we're buying bulls, it is one of the things when it comes to buying bulls that you physically need to put your eyes on it. As you had said, don't just buy off the numbers. You physically need to look at some of this kind of stuff. And I thought it was interesting because the same little comments that you were making, when we buy horses, a lot of us know to look, okay, how does the slope of the shoulder look? How's their, you know, how's their hock and their hoof, and how's everything related in there? Because we want a horse that can move out well and get under themselves and all those kinds of things. We know that with horses, but it's the same with these athletic bulls. And then, of course, our cows. It didn't really put that all together till you were mentioning that.
Yeah, I think sometimes it gets overlooked because we've made it such a scientific process on our breeding. And I think we've got more data tools to use than ever. And I'm so glad we do, in terms of genomics and EPDs that are really reliable and can help us reach our goals. But I think, you know, you need to combine that at the same time with an assessment of their phenotype to make sure they're going to fit your program, your environment. And just like you said, I mean, these bulls, they have to go out and work. Mm-hmm. And especially hock conformation, or not being too straight up and down in that shoulder, you know, they're all very important contributors to longevity. Because if you think about, you know, the amount of times that a bull is going to have to, you know, jump and really put a lot of strain on those rear hocks and pasterns and their stifles as well. You know, it's a big deal, especially for what they weigh and the amount of force that's on those joints. So really important to make sure that they have a correct angle. And I think that'll just lend itself to setting you up for success. I mean, obviously anything can happen. You know, a bull can get in a fight and have a shoulder injury that, you know, is game ending, unfortunately, and your investment goes down the tubes. But if we can at least, you know, make sure that we're putting some emphasis on that when we're selecting those cattle, I think you help decrease the chances that they're going to be out for injury early on in their career anyway.
You bet. Yeah. And I know, folks, it seems like we're focusing an awful lot on the bulls, and it's easy to do that just with the idea that that's one element that you're going to bring into your herd that could change the genetics. At the same time, as Dr. Lacey was mentioning, you know, we do have the advantage of genomics now to where you can test even your mother cows that you got in there, or your replacement heifers you're keeping, to know genetically what has to reduce the susceptibility of potentially that. Let's get into some other infectious causes. You had said there were some other things that really could cause lameness. Let's get into some of those.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at things like hairy heel wart, which has historically been more of an issue in the dairy sector, just because they're, you know, in such a more concentrated environment, and it is a contagious issue. And so, but when we are starting to see more of it, unfortunately, in beef cow herds, I've seen a couple cases this year, and it is, it's It's just frustrating because it can cause kind of chronic lameness. It takes a little while to get them over it. But the lesion that you're looking for that's associated with that particular disease, it looks like kind of a strawberry hairy heel. So on the back side of their foot at the interdigital space there, you'll see it looks kind of proliferative and a little bit like a strawberry. And it might even have like finger-like projections coming off of it. And that is treponema or hairy heel wart, as we call it. And like I said, those cattle, if you notice that being the specific lesion and it's not responding to your normal foot rot treatment regime, I would get that animal isolated as soon as possible because it is highly contagious in an environment. And unfortunately, it spreads pretty rapidly and can cause problems throughout. It is treatable. Oxytetracycline, foot bandages, sulfur foot baths can all help. But boy, those are all pretty involved, you know, and take a lot of time and effort to get them over that disease. And so especially if you're bringing in cattle from other herds, you know, I think that should be kind of a consideration for your biosecurity plan. Try and keep those animals quarantined if you can for a month, just to see if any of those type of issues pop up, because you just don't want to put the rest of your herd at risk if you can help it.
Yeah. And then I know one of the other things we were talking about at break was that with a lot of calves on the ground right now, folks have been calving, some are getting ready. For others of us, still a month or so out, but baby calves and treating that navel infection, getting a handle on that so it doesn't go further down in the body.
Yes, that this time of year, I see those joint infections in calves quite often. And the source of that typically is through the navel. So if you can make sure that they're either born in a pretty clean environment, and obviously out on pasture is the best, but this time of year with weather challenges and heifers calving and that kind of thing, I know it's not always feasible to spread them out. But if you can spray the navel, if you're calving in a more concentrated environment or a more, you know, muddy or dirty environment, trying to get that navel cleaned with iodine and dried up as soon as possible to prevent that infection from spreading is really important. If you do notice a calf that just seems a little slower, and you know, if that navel is at all painful on palpation, or if it's bigger, I say if it's the size of a Sharpie, that's usually too big. Okay. The navel, when you roll your fingers through it, mm-hmm. it should be about the size of a pencil. So if it's bigger than a pencil, it probably is a navel infection to some degree. And that infection, that bacteria gets in through there and it can spread through the bloodstream. And then that bacteria settles in the joints. Oftentimes you'll see it in the knees or the hocks or the stifles. And so the knees, if you can get an antibiotic on board quickly enough that gets to a concentration in the joint fluid, a lot of times you can prevent that from doing extensive damage and causing long-term lameness. So one that I always suggest is Nuflor, because that one, at the high dose and given at the appropriate time, it can actually help knock out the navel infection and the joint infection simultaneously. Now, some of those joint infections get so severe that they're going to need to be flushed in order to have any opportunity for success and soundness down the road. And it sounds invasive, but it's pretty quick procedure that your veterinarian can help you with. It needs to be done obviously as sterilely as possible, but if you get that joint flushed once or twice, a lot of times that animal will bounce right back and they won't have, later on, you won't ever be able to tell they had a problem. Okay. So yeah, I do think that's an area where ranchers, if you're really on top of things, watching that they don't have swollen joints, watching that they're not favoring a leg. I mean, I think people usually, when they see a calf favoring a limb, they oftentimes think they must have got stepped on. And they think that with foals too. And it's almost never that.
Oh, really?
Every once in a while it's injury or they break a leg, obviously. But a lot of times it's infection of the joint. And if we can get on it quick, they can recover and do really well.
Okay. So as you were talking about calves there, my thought a little bit of this would be, is that effective handling it right then and there? If we don't, that animal is going to have problems down the road, whether we deal with it, if we're retaining ownership, or whether it goes to the next guy down the line.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it really has effect on performance. I mean, you'll see that, and I guess that's another reason I'm pretty passionate about this topic, is when they're in chronic pain, they just don't thrive, right? And so it affects everything. Those high cortisol levels, they affect their ability to get pregnant. They affect the ability to produce sperm. And they also, you know, obviously affect their ability to gain, which is going to hurt all the way around. So anything you can do to get on top of things quick and try to prevent that that from becoming a chronic issue will sure help your bottom line, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Was there anything else? I know we talked at break some different things. Was there anything else that you would just contribute some of the lameness that we see in our herds?
Well, unfortunately, at the weaned calf level, where folks that deal in feeder cattle, mycoplasma infection is another issue that can lead to lameness problems that's really frustrating. And mycoplasma is a bacterial infection, and you might see it in the form of they get down ears or they get respiratory disease, and it can also cause joint swellings and lameness. And the reason that that is such an annoying disease to try to treat is that it doesn't have a cell wall. And so, unfortunately, our antibiotics just don't work as well against it, and it's harder to make a vaccine that's effective to prevent it. So I guess that's another instance where if you get a group of cattle that are new to your outfit or a group of feeder calves and you're starting to notice these enlarged joints or lameness, you know, trying to segregate those, get them out of that group, and try to limit the exposure to other kinds of cattle or the rest of your herd, I think is important because, like I said, it is one of those diseases that's really hard to treat. And a lot of times those just are going to become chronic lamenesses that, you know, you'll probably still be able to harvest them, but they're definitely not going to reach their genetic potential.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, let's take one more break here. And when we come back, Dr. Lacey Farmeyer is going to continue with us. We've already talked. She's already given some things that you can do to treat different issues that we've talked about here today. We're just going to finish up our conversation today with what more we could be doing or be looking at as we look at this issue of lameness in our livestock and our cattle. Definitely something that we all have dealt with or will deal with this coming year. And so we're going to continue and wrap that conversation up when we come back here on the Working Ranch Radio Show. Welcome back to the Working Ranch Radio Show. As we continue on now, my guest is Dr. Lacey Farmeyer. And as we wrap up our conversation here today, Dr. Lacey, we've already talked about a lot of the different issues, the things that cause lameness. And in that conversation that we were having, you talked about some treatments and things that we can do with that. One of the factors as also that we had mentioned and you had expanded on a little bit was some things that you also believe that if modified, our treatments, our ways of helping, such as our nutrition and the environment that they're in. Expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, the environment, you know, I would say if you can try to minimize the amount of freestanding water or ponds, things of that nature that they have access to just by fencing them off or keeping them out of certain pastures during really susceptible times of year, like spring, that's going to help you try to decrease the amount of lameness, I think, that you see. The other thing is if you're somebody who runs cattle in a development yard or has a feedlot, you know, trying to look at the surfaces and the amount of times that you're running the cattle through those working and handling facilities, mm-hmm. some of the really abrasive concrete that's out there can wear down the soles quite a bit. And then the result ends up being they wear them down so much that they develop like toe abscesses and things like that. So if you have obviously they need some traction, but if you have a little smoother concrete and that kind of thing, or maybe can decrease the amount of times that you have to work those cattle, how closely together that you have to work those cattle, it might decrease the amount of lameness that you see. We were talking a little bit about if they don't respond to the antibiotics after that, what do you think is foot rot? What else are you left with in terms of options? Because I'm worried that sometimes people just give up and think, oh, well, they didn't respond to the antibiotic. It just must be, you know, a lost cause. And I don't think we should look at lameness that way. I do think that there are a lot of treatment options out there that we can help those animals get back on track with. And so I just encourage listeners to either take it to your veterinarian if you're not comfortable assessing that foot more or pulling that foot up and doing a hoof tester on it to try to locate, you know, where is the pain coming from and then trying to get a better handle on the issue, taking it to your veterinarian earlier on in the process rather than 2 weeks into it so that they can help you decide what the issue is. And on the other side of the coin is, you know, if it is, let's say, a stifle injury where they tear their ACL just like people do, you know, you don't need to be spending the money and the time with the antibiotic treatments, yeah. if it's something structural injury wise like that, and maybe your veterinarian can help you assess that and determine, you know, what the next best option is for that animal, whether it's salvage or a more advanced treatment option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Just one final thing too, as we were at break, you said, you know, nutrition also, we talked about that a little bit ago. That's very important too. When we got these cattle different times of the year where they're more susceptible to being lame, just expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah, I would say the nutrition, it goes both ways, right? Whether that nutrition is not sufficient. Mm-hmm. So let's say they don't have the baseline nutrition levels of the macro and micronutrients they need to develop good hoof horn and have a strong immune system, you know, that's a problem. So we can't try to get them to develop on too little of a nutrition plane or maybe not the right balance. That can lead to problems. And I've seen that with cracks forming in their feet as well and leading to, I think, a higher incidence of foot rot because they just don't have that strong immune system. The other side of that is, of course, when we're supplementing them maybe too much. Yeah. And then, like we talked about earlier, having adverse effects from that in terms of the acidosis and the problems that that can lead to that we discussed earlier. So I think trying to hit that sweet spot where you're giving them the adequate amount of nutrition to develop and reach their genetic potential, but not offering them so much that or such a hot ration that you're going to cause the wheels to fall off essentially and cause problems that are going to lead to chronic lameness down the road. So having that mineral out, I think, is really important. And then if you've got, you know, I've done some liver biopsies recently in herds around here that have some antagonists that are pretty high in their environment. And so they've got a good mineral out, but they've got such high antagonists like molybdenum or sulfur or things like that that are in their environment or in the water that are actually tying up a lot of that good mineral that they're putting out and those nutrients that those animals need. So even maybe taking a look at it, is an injectable type of a trace mineral supplement a good option for your program? And you might see benefits, you know, way beyond just like the lameness issue being less over time, but maybe a bump in your conception rates or things of that nature. Sometimes I feel like lameness can be like a canary in the coal mine. Yeah. And so if you're stupid, you know, because it can be an indicator that there's something else that's just a little off in your herd health program or in your nutrition program. So paying close attention to that. And if you're seeing a higher prevalence from 1 year to the next, you know, trying to analyze, you know, why is that what's going on, I think is worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, that's a good analogy as we kind of wrap this up a little bit, maybe the canary in the coal mine. And that makes you really kind of step back and think when we start to see some of those kind of things exhibited in our herd, to step back and reevaluate our mineral program, our nutrition program, our feeding program, our breeding program, all of those things that we talked about here today. So I appreciate your insight into this. Just some final comments maybe from you before we head out.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, I know with the advent of dart guns, it's pretty tempting to just hit every lameness with a shot of antibiotic and either forget about them or come back and hit them with another dart of a different concoction the next day. But I want to caution people to do a little bit more diligent work in trying to assess that animal so that we can get it back on track and seeing if there's something else going on that we can help with. And then trying to put an emphasis on the genetic selection. I really think for the future of the beef industry and longevity, the good cowherds that I work with that have routinely have, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-old cows still retained in the herd, I do think that they put emphasis on structural correctness and quality of that foot. And I think it pays off in the long run if you do.
All right. Good advice. That's all I can say. As you were saying that, it made me realize that sometimes I kind of cuss these old cows because they're starting to bring in poor calves, but they've already been giving me pretty good calves for the last 3 years, 4 years, which is about 4 years longer than the average cow in the U.S. So maybe I need to treat him and think about her. I need to think about her a little nicer terms. So Dr. Lacey, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your insight into this topic here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. And again, today, my guest, Dr. Lacey Farmeyer, joining us here as we talk about this issue. As she was saying earlier on, I don't know if you caught that, but lameness, it is the second most costly animal health issue in our beef industry. And it's something we all deal with. Some great advice today from her on that. By the way, if you do want to reach out to her, should you have questions, you can sure find more contact information if you go to her website at stillwatervet.com. That's out of South Central Montana, just under the Absarokee Mountains there by Red Lodge, Montana. Beautiful country there. And if you want to get a hold of her, you can contact her there. Or also, as we were talking earlier, she is one of the technical service veterinarians that help with Valley Vet Supply. And when you want to ask the vet something, sometimes she is the one making that response there. So you can also find her there as well. Well, stay with us when we come back. Meteorologist Don Day is in as we take a look at our long-term weather. And of course, the captain, Tim O'Byrne, standing by for this week's edition of Tim's Two Cents. We'll be back after this.
Looking for the perfect gift for a gardener or weather enthusiast? Introducing the Tropo, a precision rain gauge that has revolutionized both reliability and convenience. Expertly engineered by meteorologists, the Tropo gauge boasts rugged durability, impeccable accuracy, and precision to the hundredth of an inch. Visit measurerain.com to order a Tropo today and use code RAINDAY, that's RAINDAY, for free shipping and 10% off. Go to MeasureRain.com.
Hey, Justin. Hey, everybody out there in Working Ranch Radio Land. We are putting the finishing touches on the April-May issue. And I got to tell you, there's a story that our very own intern, Gentry Sims, put together. We asked her to do this. It's on scholarships for you young kids out there that are heading off to school. I'll tell you what, kids. The money is out there. It's right there. All you got to do is like apply for it. So read the article when it comes out. It'll be on the digital issue online shortly after it reaches your mailbox here at the end of the month. And it's always going to have a bunch of great photography in it. Other stories that'll help you along your way. We're right there with you through thick and thin, Working Ranch Magazine. It's our 19th year. And I'm just proud as punch to be a part of it. Justin, so glad you're wrangling the radio show podcast. It's doing really great. And folks, I know that things are rough out there for a lot of you, but like I said, we're right here. We're all in this together, and we'll muddle through it somehow. Back to you in the booth.
All right, thanks, Captain. And yeah, I'm sure the information that Gentry will pull together for us for our high school seniors across the country and looking at scholarships will be very valuable. I know she's a young lady that's very focused herself and does a good job in the things that she's involved with. So I'm looking forward to that article as well as everything else coming out in that next issue of Working Ranch Magazine. Well, let's turn now and take a look at our weather as meteorologist Don Day is standing by. So as we look ahead into this next week, as we were talking a bit ago, and something that had come across my news feed, as it has for a lot of folks, the fires down in Panhandle part of Texas really been quite severe. In fact, I was just reading that the Smokehouse Creek fire in Texas, now over 1 million acres, the largest fire that Texas has ever seen. Are they going to see some relief or see some moisture that can kind of get things slowed down a bit?
Well, you know, they did actually get a little bit of snow on those fires not long after they got started. That helped a little bit. What really has been the big problem there has been the wind. And, you know, we do see a pattern where it hasn't been as windy and shouldn't be. And we do have some chances next week for the Panhandle region to be able to pick up some rain and snow as this next weather system comes off the West Coast. What's interesting about those Texas fires is, you know, the Texas up until the last 5 or 6 months or so in that particular area was in drought conditions. But really, the drought status does not have that part of the U.S. in drought. So it doesn't necessarily excessive dryness, but this is a critical time of year before we have the green up. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of dead grasses. We still have a lot of fuels.
Yeah.
So you can have a pattern that's been recently fairly decent with precipitation, but still have high fire danger. And that is really what unfolded, but really more than anything, the wind.
Yeah.
We haven't had a very windy winter compared to the last two or three, but when we get these high wind events, if one thing goes wrong, whether it's somebody being careless or a power line coming down, those winds in that part of the country can be very intense, as we know, and it can be long lasting. And that's what really drove those fires.
Yeah. So as we look out, say, 10 to 14 days out, we're approaching the end of March. What are you seeing? I know we were talking a little bit before we went on air, some things indicating that maybe April's going to have a little bit more activity And of course, as I've shared with many times, I do keep track of fog and indicating that April is going to be pretty busy as well. What are some of the things that you're seeing and where is it going to impact in our parts of the in the country here?
Yeah, we certainly do see in the long term, rest of March and into April, an active weather pattern. Now, you normally do. So that's something that's not unusual. But if you do have some of these larger, slower moving storms, they can be really impactful. One thing that we do see over the next week to 10 days is that we do see another Pacific weather system that will track across, I think, the central and southern Rockies, and we'll get the central and southern plains with a good amount of rain and snow. It's going to continue to be wet in the Gulf Coast, the Southeast, the Midwest, and the Corn Belt. One thing that we do expect to see late next week, so we're talking about as we get out into, well, let's say after the 15th, around the 15th of March, mm-hmm. we're going to see some pretty cold weather move into the northern plains and into the nation's midsection. So there is going to be probably a pretty good salvo of some colder weather that will bring along with it some rain and snow to maybe some of the dry areas of the northern plains. And I do think the West will continue, especially along those Interstate 80-70 corridors, have more opportunities for precipitation.
Okay. All right. Well, that gives us a heads up to get to preparing for those folks that are going to be calving the latter part of March. Keep your heads up on that. And for the rest of us that are still a ways out, I guess we can hold the fort down and see what April's going to look like. So thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you.
You bet. And again, meteorologist Don Day can be found each and every morning through his daily video podcast at dayweather.com. And by the way, if you're looking for weather instruments or weather stations, things like that, you can find a link to those on his website as well at dayweather.com. Well, stay with us. Coming up after the break, we'll put a wrap on this week's show as we dip into the mailbags of the Working Ranch Radio Show and hear from a listener out there regarding last week's show. We'll be back after this. To share with you an email that I received from a listener out of Manitoba regarding last week's show with Dr. Mark Johnson, as we had Dr. Johnson on looking at how we put a value on what we should be spending on bulls, putting some math in that and the return on investment. And Mark from Manitoba writing in that before people go out and buy a bunch of $14,000 bulls, some things to also be considering in that. And in last week's show, Dr. Johnson used an example of spending maybe $4,000 more on a bull that would add 32 pounds to 150 calves over the lifetime of that bull, put a value of it at $2.20 a pound. So that would give you an added return of $6,500. Now, Mark from Manitoba saying the only issue there is you need to account for slide and the value of gain. So if you take a 900-pound yearling worth $2.20 a pound and an $800 calf worth $2.30 a pound, you would see that taking into account the slide, you would not see a total of $70.40 per head gain. Rather, it'd be about half that, about $43 when you figure in slide into that. In addition, you also got to figure in, he said, that you need to add for the cost of gain, that you don't just get pounds for free. And he just rounded it off to about 75 cents a pound is what you would have a cost in that. So if you take 32 pounds at 75 cents a pound, that'd give you a total cost of $24. So then if you take the extra value you're getting from that higher priced bull that we figured out earlier of $43 minus the cost per head of $24, your net per calf is only $19 per head. So if you take that $19 per head times the 150 head of calves that that bull will sire and net it all out after all of your expenses, you're in the hole $1,150. So all of that to be said, instead of spending that $4,000 and justifying that on gross return, you also got to back out and figure net return on that. And you're probably safer to say if you cut that number in half, it'd be closer to where you're at. So I appreciate Mark's response and kind of pointing out the fact that you need to really put all of that into context and figure out your costs in all of that and total net return in that number. And one of the things I really point out too is you really do need to understand what your cost per breeding, per head, per year, in all of that. And of course, the longer you can keep a bull, the more that can go down. But just some things to think about. Appreciate Mark sending that response in. By the way, if you do have a question or comments about anything you hear, please feel free to send me an email at justin.workingranch@gmail.com. Well, just another reminder before we head out here today, the captain, as he had said earlier, they're just getting the finishing touches on the next issue of Working Ranch Magazine. And if you want to get that copy, if you're not a subscriber, it's pretty simple. Go to workingranchmag.com and you can get your subscription started today. The Working Ranch Radio Show is a production of Working Ranch Magazine, branded number one by America's Ranchers. Thanks for joining us. I'm Justin Mills, and until next time, keep your chin down and your mind in the middle. So long.